and welcome to Virtues for Life. I am Sister Denise, and this program is a conversation between Brahma Kumaris and Kumaris about virtues in life. Virtues, values, powers, and qualities are the treasures of our lives. These are the things that determine what kind of individuals we are and our contribution to positive life. The laws of spirituality have told us that if we wish to bring about positive global change, the most potent way is to work on the individual self and really inculcate and develop, cultivate our own virtues, values, qualities, and powers. These are the things that will enable us to be catalysts for global positive change. Today, in the studio at Godlywood Studio, I have with me Brother Neville Hodgkinson. Welcome to Virtues in Life.
Thank you, Denise. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. Neville Hodgkinson is a writer and journalist. He was formerly the science editor of the Sunday Times in London. He is also the president of the Janki Foundation, which is a UK-based charity which promotes the integration of spiritual values in healthcare. So I'm very happy to have you here today in Virtues for Life. We are going to talk today about altruism. Altruism, what does altruism mean?
It's a subject that I like very much. I think mainly because I see it as a kind of spectrum. I don't think it's possible for a human being to be completely altruistic, but we can move towards higher levels of altruism, and that's a very worthy goal.
So what would be your precise definition of altruism?
I can't really give an exact definition. That's why I'm answering in a roundabout way.
Okay.
It's like you emerge your humanity more and more. The more you become not so self-centered, but more interested in serving other people,
so
that makes you more altruistic.
So it's about generosity, it's about doing things for others. Does it mean that you disregard yourself?
No, because it's not possible to become more altruistic without taking care of yourself spiritually.
But there are people who go overboard and they want to do things for others and then they neglect themselves. So what's that?
That actually, to speak of it harshly in relation to my own experience, is ego.
Oh, really?
Yeah. because, you know, I used to feel that I was doing things for other people. But whenever you're doing things in a way that leads you to neglect yourself, you know, in a major way, I mean, you can override the bodily needs, for example, for the sake of a higher purpose. But if consistently in life you're neglecting yourself in an internal sense so that your spiritual battery is running low, then that's not real, that's not altruism. It's usually some kind of addiction. And the ego seems to be the root of most of our addictions.
So talk a little bit about those addictions.
Well, one that I used to be really subject to was workaholism.
Oh.
And I felt that that I was a good employee, that I gave a lot for my wages, that I really wanted to serve through my work, which was for many years as a medical correspondent. I worked as a medical correspondent and as a science correspondent, and a lot of my work was in the area of medical science.
And do you think of medical science as fundamentally an altruistic phenomenon in human experience?
Not fundamentally, no, because of this ego problem that comes in. Great things have been achieved by medical science. But when the idea of achieving is actually for taking reasons, that is, when an individual is making big efforts on behalf of medical science in order, in a sense, to promote themselves for the sake of winning a big prize, or for the sake of earning more money, for the sake of position, this kind of thing. When these elements are strong in the motivation within what you're doing, whether it would work in any profession actually, then it's like a seed of poison that spoils the glass of milk. You know, it means that your judgment as to what is really useful for people is flawed. Ego can drive you to do a lot, and a lot of good things emerge from ego-driven behavior. People build empires on the basis of egos, industrial empires, physical empires.
They certainly do.
Yeah.
But in your life, okay, so you had to work through addictive workaholism.
Yes, yes.
You wanted to achieve something.
Yes.
You had to gather together your energy and so on. How do you create the balance so that what you're doing is more altruistic than addictive?
Well, that's been this wonderful journey that I've had, really, the spiritual journey, where previously, when ego was a strong part of my motivation in my work, which was about the first half of my career, I didn't know how to maintain that balance. And I was actually, I found it very hard to say no. I was always wanting to do more, because I always needed to stay on top and to be the best, kind of thing.
So what drives altruism? What is the quality that's behind it?
The beautiful quality that brings it out is when you become free of ego, essentially.
But
as I indicated, I'm moving towards that.
Yeah.
And that's the greatness of the spiritual journey.
Did you have to go through humiliations to get free?
Yes, I have had to, definitely.
How has humiliation been helpful?
Well, it's the pain of learning that motivations that you thought were positive are actually negative. When you're slapped down by life, by people, by individuals, in ways that you're not prepared for, and you think that what you're doing is good, but you learn that other people don't appreciate it, that's a kind of humiliation that helps you to understand that actually, altruism wasn't really as present in your motivation as you might have thought.
So you thought it was altruism, but really it was egotism.
Exactly, yes.
So
I made that mistake especially in that first half of my career. I thought I was doing things for the sake of public good, that there were some good motives. I recognized also that I was driven in a way, but I thought that what I was doing was primarily being a decent human being. But later I learned that actually this selfishness was present in my motives.
So it's a process of removing the selfishness and becoming more human, more integrated within the spectrum of other people? Or
yes, definitely. All of that follows when you start to learn, as you indicated earlier, to take care of yourself internally.
Now, you're president of the Janki Foundation.
Chairman, actually. I chair the Janki Foundation. The president is Daddy Janki, the head of the Brahma Kumaris.
Right, okay. So now, you're talking about bringing spirituality into healthcare. How does that relate to altruism?
Well, many people in the health professions enter those professions feeling that they want to serve. That's a strong part of their motivation. But often they become burned out and exhausted because of not recognizing that actually these other motives have crept in as well. And so they too find it, in the same way that I found it difficult to maintain balance in my journalistic endeavors, they also find that it's because of not recognizing how these non-altruistic elements are really actually part of the reality, they find that they're giving more, they don't know how to stop that, and until they feel drained, and then money and position start to become more and more important.
Now, altruism, if we go to the dictionary meaning, means really loving others. So, from an emotional point of view, how does love for others fit in your spiritual journey.
The love emerges because your self-respect grows. When that self-respect is lacking because of defining yourself through your role, through your income, through your relationships, anything externally defining yourself, your sense of who you are, that actually makes you vulnerable to lack of self-respect because you can't control it ultimately. You may work harder and harder to try and convince yourself that you're a good person, but actually, ultimately, the world will just suck you dry if you're needy rather than really genuinely giving. So when you stop working in that way and start paying more attention to rooting your sense of who you are in your spiritual identity as a child of God, then the strength that grows internally allows you to become more giving towards others.
So your interaction with God as maybe an instrument, talk to me about what that means to you, being an instrument.
It's a beautiful concept, really beautiful. It would mean that goodness, not your goodness in a sense, but the goodness that runs life, that runs through humanity, that comes from that source, you know, of the father of humanity, the seed of the human family. There's goodness, there's a good energy. Essentially, a humane energy is at the root of our being.
So are you telling me that when a person wants to give of themselves, they just exhaust, and that being an instrument and being a conduit for that goodness is really the difference between the ego part and the...
Exactly. You align yourself with that goodness, and somehow then it's as if that goodness does the work, and it's so much more beautiful a way to work than out of ego. Ego always leads to frustration and suffering, whereas when you can work with this goodness, it's such a joy.
So when you're working with healthcare professionals to bring spirituality into their way of operating, how do they respond to that idea?
They respond really well. Initially, there can be some suspicion. It might, because it goes into territory that is unfamiliar for those trained medically in the Western scientific materialistic model of the human being.
Well, because science and spirituality are essentially perceived as opposite and divergent.
They have been seen that way, although at the frontiers they're beginning to come together very interestingly.
Did you have a problem when you were starting on your spiritual journey to reconcile science with that?
Very definitely, yes.
How did you resolve that?
It's still being resolved, but to begin with, in the early years of my spiritual journey, which began about 32 years ago, I read quite widely on quantum theory, the new physics, some of those interpretations of frontier science that indicated that the world is not primarily material, but that actually there's a consciousness at the root of things, that there's something called the consciousness-based paradigm within science, and that completely reverses the materialistic model. But I still couldn't really reconcile it with what I was doing spiritually, so actually for many years I just left it on one side. But I've been putting my head back into that again more recently, after some 30 years, and they're now getting closer and closer. It's quite exciting.
That's very interesting, because it's very important, I think, to have individuals who can be bridges between these very different paradigms. Do you feel yourself to be some kind of a bridge?
I'd like to be. Certainly my life has been you could define it as a kind of bridge internally. A lot of the work that I've done over these last 30 years has been to bridge that gap between the materialistic worldview, which has its own validity within its terms of reference, and the spiritual worldview, which I now regard as more fundamental and more important. And bringing those two together is a wonderful journey.
How do you relate spirituality the practice of Raj Yoga, of Brahma Kumaris, India, and so on. How does that fit with your British background of Christianity and so on? How do you work through or resolve that gap?
It's been difficult at times because of lack of understanding on my part of what spirituality really means. But when you go right to the heart of spirituality, it means actually what we were talking about in this discussion about altruism.
So you think altruism and spirituality is pretty much synonymous?
Yes, yes. The spiritual journey and the training associated with it is aimed at re-emerging our true humanity.
So when you talk about humanity, what is it that is really universal, that can go across, that can cut across between the materialists, the religionists, the different political spectrum? Mm. Would you be able to describe that?
Maybe. It's kind of begging the question in a sense to call it the human spirit, but I do feel that we are spiritual beings having a material experience, and that the mistake comes when we over-identify with the physical. When we over-identify with the physical, we suffer because it's constantly in a state of change. And if we think that's who we are, it hurts as it changes. But if we can make the shift to understanding that we're spirit, then we watch this game as it moves in front of us with lightness, and the hurt that destroys our equanimity and our love is no longer such a problem.
So let's talk about pain, because you mentioned hurt, you mentioned the whole thing of ego and all of this. So how does that human experience of pain impact the concept of altruism?
I think when we... pain... I like to distinguish between pain and suffering.
Okay.
Pain, you could say, is more, I would say, something more physical, the way I'd like to define it, and suffering is more of the spirit. And some pain in life is inevitable. You get signals from life, like if you put your finger in a flame, you get pain. It's a useful signal to say, don't do that, you'll destroy your flesh. Similarly, you get pain if you do certain actions towards others, and they say, don't do that, I'll destroy you, it hurts.
So how have you managed the pain in your life?
Well, I used not to manage it very well, and that's when I was ego-driven. I didn't recognize where the pain was coming from. But the beauty of the spiritual journey is that it allows you to observe pain and see it in a more positive light.
So you don't
suffer so deeply.
So what would be your fundamental pain that you had to deal with through spirituality?
It's been this false sense of identity. That was what somehow in the first earlier part of my life, right through to the age of 37, when I actually kind of realized that I was going down some kind of cul-de-sac with my life, I suffered increasingly intensely. I threw myself into life. I thought that I was doing the right things for life. I had a lovely wife and children and job and money and all of those things. But I suffered because none of them was satisfying me. In fact, they were all taking me further away from myself because I thought that I was all those things.
So let's talk about meaning. Do you think suffering is to do with lack of meaning?
Yes, definitely. I think suffering is to do with losing a sense of who you are, with losing yourself in other things, and that automatically brings a loss of meaning. That's exactly what I felt in my mid-30s. I felt, I'm making all this effort to live life as the world seems to ask of me, but it's meaningless because there's no love in it, there's no juice in it. That's how I felt. I felt as if I was just becoming drained. Really bad.
Yeah, very interesting. So now that you're at this point in the spiritual journey, how is your you know, the next few kilometers of your spiritual journey? How do you see that? What's your direction now?
There's been enormous progress in terms of relationships, but in the sense of moving towards relationships that are free and light instead of binding and depending. In terms of where there's still quite a lot of progress, although so much has been recognized and removed in terms of my motivation with my work, still I get wound up by things sometimes, and I really want to be that instrument that you spoke of. I want to move more towards that sense that I only do because it's like God's will, not because it's Neville's will.
Okay, you're a writer, and while you may not be anymore in the in Fleet Street journalism, but I know that you have done a number of books with Daddy Janky. How does altruism flow through your writing?
It relates to the last question that you asked, and to my initial comment that this is a journey towards being more altruistic, and I'm not there yet. But what I would love would be to feel, and I actually feel as if destiny or fate is holding me in some kind of cooker that is actually trying to teach me how to write purely with love, purely with altruism. Maybe it's not possible to do that completely whilst I'm a human being, but I feel as if that's the goal, and that somehow if I can push through this ego that constrains and really write as an instrument with love, that there'll be a different dimension to my work altogether.
So what's the wall in between? What's the obstacle?
Sanskars. It's like past the fruits of past experience that still make me wanting results, you know, still wanting to see that other people appreciate what I do. This still makes me somewhat conditional in how I'm working, so that sometimes I get frustrated and upset if I feel as if I put a lot of effort into something and it's just rejected or thrown on one side. It shows me that I've still not got a truly giving motive there.
So now, the journey, how long is this journey?
Well, I hope it will finish very soon, but well, in the sense of you know, actually moving, really breaking through that wall of ego to...
Because you don't want to have the state of having achieved it just the second where you have to die. You want to be able
I would
to
love
live
the first.
In that.
I would like that, and it's coming. Definitely, there's much better motivation now in the work, and I really do work much more from a giving motive, and I know that because I suffer less in the face of rejection, but I'm still somewhat conditional.
Well, let's talk a little bit about rejection, because I remember talking to Liz, your wife, and she was telling me something very interesting, that if you want to be a writer, you have to be able to manage rejection.
She's right, and she had a lot in the early days, but she's broken through with a lot of courage. She's had something like 55 books published, so she's had a lot of success. In my case, it's more like a lot of inner work has been happening. Liz said to me recently, you speak of having made a lot of progress in spiritual terms, but what about emerging your inner potential in terms of, you know, your contribution to the world in practical terms?
Well, that's part of your spirituality, isn't it?
Well, it would be. I'd like to see more of it, but at the moment, it's as if as I was indicating, I've been kept in this cooking pot.
Is it blocking your creative juices, or?
In a sense, yes. It's as if
break out of your cooking pot.
No, I have to cook.
You have to cook. Okay.
You know, I have to become.
So you're really not quite ready.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
But so it takes patience, it takes perseverance, but maybe you need to do some exploding?
Perhaps. Maybe. I have a feeling that when the cake is really ready, it will be
Well, there'll be the nice fragrance, right?
It should be, definitely.
Fragrance of spirituality.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, we're coming to the end of our time. So, Neville, thank you very much for your insights into altruism. Altruism is perhaps a difficult word. Maybe not everybody's familiar with that term. But let us ponder for a moment on this word altruism, love for others, being an instrument for that pure goodness, that energy that is the key to the universe, the force that's driving this material world, that spiritual essence that is also our source. And just think, you know, can I put greater meaning in my life by harnessing that energy of altruism? So thank you very much, Neville Hodgkinson, for being with us today at Godlywood Studio in Virtues for Life. And thank you to our audience for participating in today's conversation. Om Shanti.